Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. My name is Sandra Barrett, and on behalf of University College of Syracuse University, it's my pleasure to welcome you here this morning to hear from Dr. Linda Lemura. And I'm going to also take the privilege of introducing Dr. Lemura, who is her first time here, and I want to say she's the new president of LeMoyne College, although it's been a year and a half, but she's still new to us. So I'm going to say she's the 14th president of LeMoyne College, and she since July 1st of 2014. And it was really a historic moment because she is not only, she's the first lay person to be president not only of LeMoyne College, but to any Jesuit institution in the United States. And I don't know, maybe the world. Did anyone check that out? Who knows? I know many of you know Dr. Lemura because she's a Syracuse native, a graduate of Bishop Grimes High School, a graduate of Niagara University. She received her master's and PhD both in applied physiology from Syracuse University. Before becoming president, though, she was at LeMoyne as provost and vice president for academic affairs. She was dean of arts and sciences from 2003 to 2007 at LeMoyne. And before that, she served as a professor and associate dean at Bloomsburg University of Pennsylvania. So her research, needless to say, she is a scientist. Her research is in pediatric obesity and other areas of metabolism and also the biology of aging. And so we're happy to have her here to hear about what's going on at LeMoyne, her plans for LeMoyne, and then, as always, to take some questions. So thank you for joining us.
Well, good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Wow, this is great. I've heard so much about the Thursday Morning Roundtable from my colleagues in the community, and now I finally get to experience it. Thank you, Sandra Barrett, for this kind invitation. Before I begin, I'm wondering if you could show me a count of hands. Do we have any alums in the audience? We have a couple, huh? We will carry the flag today. All right. Well, this past 18 months have been very exciting for me and for LeMoyne, I hope. It's been quite a ride. It's been historic, eventful, emotional, a tad bit stressful, but overall exhilarating. And that's the way we like it at LeMoyne. Our college is named after the French Jesuit, Simon LeMoyne. Father LeMoyne was involved in several missions to what is now upstate New York during the mid-1600s, working as an ambassador of peace with the Iroquois and other Native American tribes. When LeMoyne College was founded in 1946, we became the 27th Jesuit institution in the United States. There are 28, and the first to open as a coeducational institution. Like a number of other colleges and universities of our age, LeMoyne's founding was spurred on in part by the GI Bill to provide educational opportunities for the millions of servicemen and women returning from the war. Our growth has been impressive, particularly in recent years. In less than 70 years, our campus has expanded from 2 buildings to 35. Over the past 7 years, we have recruited 6 of the largest first-year classes in our young history. Since 2009, we've invested more than $75 million in new or existing academic, student, athletic buildings, and facilities. We announced our first named school, the Madden School of Business, in 2012, and over the past couple of years have launched the College of Arts and Sciences and a School of Graduate and Professional Studies. All of these schools have impressive and growing partnerships and articulation agreements with prestigious institutions in the United States and perhaps more importantly, around the world. So it is against this backdrop that I took over as president on July 1st, 2014. There was a lot of fanfare when I was named president. I am the first female lay president of a Jesuit institution in the country. I'm married and have a family. That's unusual. and only the second in the world. Yeah. You're probably... Oh, thank you. Thank you, Anne. I bet you're wondering what took them so long. It's not... It's not a short history. Jesuit education has been around since 1540. But what excites me, however, is the chance that I've been given to contribute to this inspiring history. Earlier this year, I had a life-changing experience that took me quite literally on a journey to where it all began. I'd like to share a little bit of that journey with all of you. This past summer, I had the privilege of traveling with several of my colleagues from the Board of Trustees to Spain, where we walked in the footsteps of St. Ignatius of Loyola, the founder of the Society of Jesus, better known to most of you here as the Jesuits. We stood in the home in Loyola where the young Ignatius, still recovering from a serious injury suffered during battle, underwent a life-changing spiritual conversion. We walked the grounds in Montserrat, where he laid down his sword before the Madonna and formally turned his life to God. We gathered for Mass in the very cave in Manresa, where Ignatius began to write the spiritual exercises. How many of us have felt the contrast between what we have read in books or have seen in photographs and the lived reality of standing on sacred ground or walking in the footprints of history? As I followed the path of St. Ignatius, I felt this thrill of discovery. In fact, I'd even call it an awakening. It was a transformative experience, one that reinforced my belief in the power of Jesuit education and my deep commitment to advancing and sustaining this singular way of learning. If the lives of the saints are marked with trials and obstacles, we nonetheless like to imagine that their triumphs can be mapped in a steady upward trajectory. And by contrast, when we map our own lives, we see a series of false starts, backward glances, circular motions, and sudden turns. Yet one of the most illuminating insights I gained from this extraordinary trip is how profoundly human St. Ignatius was, and how much of his own experience of revelation was a journey, a process marked by a series of pivots and shifts and new reflections. If St. Ignatius had access to a spiritual GPS, in the common vernacular, as he evolved from wounded soldier to Christian intellectual, it often would have been in the process of recalculating. When he encountered obstacles along the way, he would pivot and reorient his mission. The result was an endless dialogue between his Christian ideals and their manifestation in the world around him. St. Ignatius did not initially imagine that he would begin an intellectual tradition that would yield some of the most outstanding colleges and universities in the world. Ignatius of Loyola traveled from the battlefields of Pamplona, Spain, to the mountains of Montserrat, the caves of Manresa, the deserts of the Holy Land, and ended in the libraries of Paris. It is even now today, if you were to track his footsteps, a dizzying road to travel. So imagine what he went through in 1540. Yet in the very improbability and seeming randomness of this journey, we find the architecture of Jesuit education. For in all his searching, in all of his travels, St. Ignatius was following a singular path. No matter how many times the road turned or twisted, he looked for God in all things. So this is the first insight of Jesuit education, that no matter the specific course of study, from biochemistry to medieval art to nanotechnology to American literature, whether our students are driven toward a professional end or whether they are exploring the life of the mind, always we have at our core the yearning to find God in all things and to translate the desire for individual success into a desire to serve the common good. change is written into the Jesuit understanding of education. It's a necessary part of the growth of our students, both in need and in desire. But it's also necessary for the institutions that serve these students. We constantly review and revise how we teach in Jesuit institutions as we seek to use what is best about emerging technologies, always retaining an appreciation for the beauty of a great classroom lecture. Do you remember those days? A meticulously structured essay or a sharply reasoned argument. In just the time that I've been president, and in the 7 years that I was provost and the 4 years that I was dean, we have changed course. We have pivoted, corrected course, really, in response to the shifting landscape of higher education and the always present needs of our students. Now, we can measure the changes at Lemoyne in bricks and mortar, in the state-of-the-art science building we constructed, or the new majors and professional programs it now supports. We can measure those changes numerically in the increasing size of our student body or the rankings that have celebrated Lemoyne for so many years. Those are wonderful things. We can measure these changes in new partnerships and creative responses to the economic challenges we all face. Most recently, we have partnered with state government, entrepreneurial industries in the Central New York region, and the School of Nanoscience and Engineering in our state's capital, the world's preeminent leader in nanotechnology. And as a result of this partnership, our students will have the opportunity to study some of the latest technologies and to intern at the most creative industries in the country. What will the students of the School of Nanoscience gain? They will have access to a Jesuit liberal arts education. Now, what do I mean by that? To the worlds of philosophy, theology, literature, social science, foreign language, and the fine arts. In the field of nanotechnology, students are trained to think as small as possible. We're going to teach them to think big. So this is my next journey. The road from Pamplona has shifted to upstate New York. This is an unprecedented move for Lemoyne. Yet amid all of this change, I take to heart the example of St. Ignatius of Loyola. It is the common thread of our mission that keeps us, despite all of the shifts and pivots, on a steady course to the greater good. Father David McCallum, a Jesuit at Lemoyne, Special Assistant for Mission Integration, was our guide during the trip to Spain. And in the course of our journeys, Father McCallum described Jesuit education as beginning with a converted heart, moving through the rigors of the intellect, and ending with a holistic experience of the world where individual success is measured by the success, health, and happiness of the community around you. This new partnership is a model of what Jesuit education is supposed to be and do. It will yield great opportunities for students, but it will also contribute to the health and prosperity of the community in which we live. So St. Ignatius tells us that change is a healthy part of discerning truth and finding faith, and that as dangerous as the road will be, it will always lead to the good. And still, these are dark times for higher education, particularly for those of us who work at liberal arts colleges. I may want to follow the call of St. Ignatius, but every now and then all I can hear is Bob Dylan telling me the times they are a-changin'. I recently read the inspired bracing essay by William Dershowitz in Harper's Magazine entitled "The Neoliberal Arts: How College Sold its Soul to the Marketplace." It's not an entirely comfortable intellectual space for any college administrator to occupy, much less a college president. And still, as disheartening as this brilliantly written essay is, it gave me both perspective and even a little bit of hope. Let me start with the bad news. Dershowitz describes a shift from the ethos that dominated higher education from its earliest days in the United States through to the mid-1970s, in which learning for the sake of learning was seen as an unquestioned good, to the current ethos, less an ethos than a practice, in which learning is only good if it can be measured, bought, or sold. So we have reached a moment where skills and information have become more important than wisdom and insight, and where the marketplace has turned higher education into a producer of producers. Let me quote a bit from Dershowitz. He writes, "Everybody knows that the percentage of students majoring in English has plummeted since the 1960s. But the percentage majoring in the physical sciences, physics, chemistry, geology, astronomy, and so forth, has fallen even more, by 60%. As of 2013, only 1.5% of students graduated with a degree in one of those subjects, and only 1.1% in math. It's not the humanities, per se, that are under attack. It's learning. Learning for its own sake. Curiosity for its own sake. Ideas for their own sake. It's the liberal arts, but understood in their true meaning, as all of those fields in which knowledge is pursued as an end in and of itself, the sciences and the social sciences included." Oddly enough, even after reading this paragraph, I found some comfort because I work at Lemoyne, a Jesuit college. There are institutions where students can major in things like outdoor recreation without ever having read Thoreau or Marx, without thinking deeply about the meaning of nature or the nature of work. A student can major in international business without taking even a single course in world history and without ever reflecting on other cultures or diversity in the workplace. Now, there's nothing wrong with working in the field of outdoor recreation or making one's career in the world of international business. There is, however, something wrong if students enter these fields with only information and no insight, with facts and no context, with goals but no moral compass with which to enact them. At Lemoyne, we give students the Ignatian GPS. We have a core curriculum built upon the 500-year-old tradition of Jesuit education, which first articulated the power of the liberal arts to reflect and refine the best of human culture and divine inspiration. I know that there are institutions where curiosity and reflection and exploration of the self are increasingly seen as indulgences. I know also that as a Jesuit institution, Lemoyne will never be one of them. I took another journey this year, a much shorter one to a much less exotic, far more quotidian destination. I walked down the hall and sat for the afternoon in our financial aid office at Lemoyne. It did not look like Spain. I sat there for hours, listening to students describe unbelievable pressures, needs, and sometimes hopeless-seeming circumstances, and I listened to our financial aid counselors as they worked to find every possible form of support, every resource available to help our students bridge the gap between realities that they can't change and the dreams that inspired them to come to Lemoyne in the first place. I sat there listening to this painful negotiation between limited resources and abiding needs, and I felt the moral obligation to do better for everyone involved. In other words, I felt the demand to follow the Ignatian example. The intellect must serve the common good. And as much as I agree with Dershowitz that the mission of higher education has been muddled by the politics and the rhetoric of the marketplace, our students are nonetheless bound by the force of those politics and that market. I cannot ignore the real-world concern of parents and students, nor can I simply ignore the forces of the market as it transforms higher education. The Jesuit education we provide, however, must be respected also. Our mission is too important to cheapen or undermine. I need to find, and we all need to find, a way to change the paradigm, to make the market value us rather than trading our values in the market. And I suppose that's why I'm so excited about the new roads that Lemoyne is building in partnership, not only with institutions like the School of Nanoscience and Engineering, but also with our sister Jesuit schools across the country and around the world. We have been, and continue to be, sought out not despite our commitment to the liberal arts, but because of it. What I have found in my travels over the past year is that our commitment to the higher part of higher education has made us a unique partner for those who want inspired intellects as much as they want dedicated and competent workers. Now, I would be remiss if I did not at this point say a word or two about my faculty and about the work that they do to further our mission and take us down new roads. If, as cultural critics suggest, that this group of youngsters, the millennial generation, is overwhelmed with data, awash in discrete and disconnected bits and bytes of information, if they are too distracted by technology, by worry, by their own confused ambitions, if they have been assessed and tested until education is nothing more than filling in blanks and checking boxes, if all of this is true, and studies suggest that much of it is, the faculty of a Jesuit institution give them, through inspired, caring, and highly personal instruction, the connections they need to make sense of the confusion. A Jesuit education provides them with the calm and quiet reflection necessary for our students to negotiate the troubled waters they will face upon graduation. It will help them to connect all of those bits and bytes and dots until our students can form a more clear and accurate picture of the world they live in. Please allow me to quote from my inaugural address that I gave this past March. A liberal arts education, as imagined and articulated by the Jesuits who founded Lemoyne, was a call to service in a time of need, and it remains so today. A Jesuit education is not meant to be a luxury or the capstone to a life of leisure. A degree from Lemoyne College is intended to be the armor that will allow students from all backgrounds and means to thrive in a sometimes dangerous, always challenging world. A Lemoyne College education opens doors for those who want access to the riches of culture and the benefits of hard work. It invites students to live lives of service, faith, intellect, and integrity. Gone are the days when students walked off the stage with their diploma, immediately started a job, and stayed there until they retired. It's over. According to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, on average, Americans today will hold 11 jobs during their working lives. Making so many career moves places a premium on the ability to be agile and adaptive, inquisitive and curious, well-rounded and cultural, with strong writing and communication skills, all attributes that are the end result of a liberal arts education. In closing, let me quote a Jesuit who has also gained notoriety recently for his own first. Pope Francis. He was speaking to a group of students from a Jesuit-run school in Italy. I quote, "School is one of the educational environments where one grows by learning how to live and how to become grown-up, mature men and women. Following what St. Ignatius teaches us, the main element in school is learning to be magnanimous. This means having a big heart and having a greatness of soul. It means having grand ideals, the desire to achieve great things in response to what God asks of us. And precisely because of doing this, doing everyday things, our daily actions and commitments and meetings with people well. It means doing the little things every single day with a big heart that is open to God and to others. Thank you all for listening this morning. Thank you for this opportunity to speak. God bless all of you.
Thank you. Question. Do you stand for us, Bill? Thanks.
Hi, thank you, and it's good to see you again. Having done two presidencies, both in the public sector, I'm wondering how you're going to tackle some of these more fundamental issues with your board and with your faculty, given the political realities, particularly one president who has presidential candidate who said we need more welders than philosophers.
Thank you so much for that question. I guess I'll approach the first part of your question first. There's no question that higher education is under immense pressure. This country, since 2008, the Great Recession, the middle class has essentially been pummeled in this country and has not been receiving significant wage increases since that time. And as a result, the ability for colleges and universities, the publics, the privates, the community colleges, have to be very mindful about how tuition increases move ahead in the future. In the past, as sort of the darling child of the economy, institutions of higher learning could raise tuition higher than rates of inflation. That is also over. It's also true to say that in the private sector, where technology can help cut costs and make private business and industry more efficient, that simply is not the case in higher education and also in the healthcare sector. There is, back in 1972, Senator Moynihan described the problem of healthcare and in education as suffering from something known as Baumol's cost disease, meaning that high-touch, low-productivity institutions would have a very difficult time in the 21st century because technology actually costs more. It does not save you more money. Since the technology revolution we've experienced on our own campus, we have extraordinary technology in our business school, whether it's in the trading room or in our chemistry, physics, mathematics labs. They haven't saved us any money. They've cost us a tremendous amount of money, and that in turn often has to move to the cost of tuition to the student. So the onus is on institutions of higher learning to form partnerships, to leverage intellectual and other resources in order to modulate the increases in tuition. Without effective partnerships, institutions will suffer in some cases. Well, you'll experience, if you haven't already, you've heard about massive layoffs of faculty, cuts. The problem with it is institutions of higher learning cannot cut their way out of this mess. It's simply not possible. If you cut too much, you're actually hurting your only product, if you will, and I don't like to use that pejorative word in this particular context. But you need to be able to continue to invest in order to get the best possible faculty that you can afford. The way through this is what I like to call on our campus the third revenue stream. And what I mean by that is, traditionally, institutions of higher learning would rely on tuition, particularly private, and philanthropy. Those two sources of revenue are no longer adequate if you want to continue to compete and give your students the best possible education that they can possibly afford. So by engaging in partnerships and leveraging intellectual partnerships and resources, institutions can, if they're clever enough, and God willing, I think that we are, can bring in new sources of revenue from business and industry that they never have in the past, with the end result of plowing those resources into financial aid to make what we do more affordable. That's the direction that we're going into at Lemoyne College. We'll be partnering with businesses to provide mentorships, internships for our students, but also an element of revenue sharing for institutions that are ethical, have great integrity. We never want to sell our soul to an institution that is not ethical or treating its employees well. That, in turn, those resources will help make our tuition more affordable. Now, insofar as the political types, I find it quite curious that the political types who actually had the benefit of a liberal arts education are now undermining it. And I wonder if, for example, Senator Rubio or our own president, who mocked a degree in art history, who, by the way, has education from a liberal arts institution, would like their own children only to have access to welding. That's not negative at all. In my own personal case, my father was a carpenter who loved opera. I think about Du Bois, the purpose of education is not to make men carpenters, but carpenters men. And this notion of dichotomous, these choices of either or rather than both and, are insulting to the American public and undermine the kind of education that has made this country so great. Now, thank you. I encourage Senator Rubio to take a look at what's going on in China that is investing in the liberal arts rather than divesting. There's a lesson to be learned there. Yes, sir.
Good morning again.
Thank you.
I was fortunate to have 8 years of a Jesuit education, Canisius High School and Canisius College.
We are related, sir.
Yes, in a way. The one thing I always remember, what I think I took away most, is that you learned how to learn.
Amen.
Basically, as with the Jesuit education. What I was going to ask you, if you would do, is maybe elaborate a little bit more. I know Canisius is doing a lot of it, is that having the students have a lot of community involvement, community service, whatever you want to call it, almost as part of their curricula, to just as we used to think in terms of doing term papers or whatever, and now it's community involvement, mm-hmm. community service that you're asked to do.
Sure.
Could you share a little bit more what LeMoyne is doing along those lines?
Sure.
And I want to ask if you could expand that more to institutionally. I know you mentioned all the buildings and your footprint, but physically, LeMoyne's community engagement with the community around it in a physical kind of way.
Sure, sure. First of all, allow me to say, and this connects to the question asked by the gentleman on my right, when students are at LeMoyne College, they often ask us, and my own daughter, who's at a Jesuit institution, asks me, why do I need to take this? You know, so I was a professor and a dean and a provost. Those words are like nails on the chalkboard, okay? And I said to my daughter, you know, there are 189 Jesuit institutions around the world, some of the best on the planet. I don't care where you go to school, just choose one of 189, okay? And she goes, okay, 188, because I will not go where you work. So the quick answer is to a student who says, why do I need to take this, is by virtue of the fact that you're asking me why you need to take it indicates that you need it. I'm a mom. When I chat with alums, the first question that I ask them, and I've met with thousands of alums around the country, tell me the discipline or disciplines that you took at LeMoyne that had the greatest impact on your life. Number one, without any hesitation, philosophy. I'm looking right at you because I know you understand me. Number two, theology. Number three, Shakespeare. Never, ever, my colleagues are in the room, 0% of the time will you hear, I should have had another accounting class. Organic chemistry changed my life. They may be the most successful physicians or investment bankers or lawyers. They never mention the major. So it's the core curriculum that actually drives the distinctive element of a LeMoyne education. And to that end, it's because of that that we're able to integrate into the high-impact practices at LeMoyne and, indeed, in higher education in general. What are they? Undergraduate research, research opportunities that are available as soon as the freshman year, study abroad, multiple internships, and service learning. All of those things are integrated into the core curriculum and into the majors at Lemoyne College. But obviously, we place a premium on service learning. There's a reason that I gave you the context of St. Ignatius. The intellect is used as a mechanism for good and for service. It's not good to have access to a world-class education and to be consumed only with your own self. That's not the purpose of what we do at Lemoyne and indeed many institutions of higher learning. Of course we want our students to be successful and have wonderful careers. We can do those things. We always have. But there has to be something more to what we do at a college like ours, and it's this constant understanding of how we can use the intellect to serve others. I'm so pleased that Frank Ridzi is in the audience here, a professor of sociology. Let me give you an example. Because of the work of Frank and his colleagues studying the impact of giving individuals in certain zip codes in the city of Syracuse, and we all know that the city of Syracuse has immense poverty needs. There's no question about it. The data are very, very clear. And he demonstrated empirically that when young children have access to books, they're able to attend kindergarten more ready and eager to learn how to read than those who do not. And because of that comprehensive work, by gathering evidence, by articulating a hypothesis, analyzing data, children now in Syracuse, in Onondaga County, is that correct, Frank, will have books sent to them every month, right, in order to prepare them from ages 0 to 5 years so that they're ready for school. Again, these are empirically driven. It's not just feel-good stuff, right? They're empirically driven analyses, and we know from studies that if students are on point by third grade, with regard to reading and math, in particular about fifth grade, they're going to be behind for the rest of their studies. So prevention is where it's at, right? And Frank is a great example of service learning in action, but also it's not just his own line of inquiry, which is the essence of Jesuit education. Of course, Frank has to go through rank and tenure. He has to be a great teacher, but also a great scholar. At Lemoyne, the faculty will engage students in scholarship really to their own detriment so that we're generating the next generation of scholars. So he does work with students side by side so they see the greater good of scholarship and the impact of scholarship in the community. There are so many other examples of Lemoyne in the community. We could go on and on, but I want to make sure if there are any other questions before I give it.
I was visiting a friend the other day, and on the table between us was the 2016 Lemoyne calendar. Out of curiosity, I had to go through every month. And, of course, the campus pictures were absolutely beautiful. But what I'd like you to speak to were the phrases, the words, the sentences on each of those pictures, and talk about the human dynamic between alums and their former professors.
Thank you. I get a little bit choked up because when I meet with alums, they tell me about the impact that faculty members and members of our Jesuit community at Lemoyne have had on their lives. These are transformational experiences, and there's something very distinctive about these relationships when alumni come to me and say, I need to tell you about the impact that this particular professor had on my life. And, you know, the take-home message for me is a little bit humbling in that when I meet with alums, they never talk about who the president was. Could care less. How's father so-and-so? How is professor so-and-so? And in our faith tradition at Lemoyne, Catholic and Jesuit, every relationship between a faculty member and a student, or Jesuit and a faculty member and a student, these are sacred relationships. And what I mean by that is, in the case of our Pope, Pope Francis, as you might imagine, when the first Jesuit Pope was elected, there was elation on our campus. I could have been found dancing on a desk, I think. We never expected to have a Jesuit Pope. And he talks about relationships between human beings as encounters. If you go back and take a look at every single speech that he gave when he was in New York and Washington and Philadelphia, virtually every speech, and I've read them half a dozen times to a dozen times, uses the word encounter. Encounter with refugees, encounter with the marginalized, encounter with the poor. Each one of these changes our lives in tangible ways. And that also happens on our campus. Each encounter between a faculty member and a student, and they're not always wonderful encounters, but they're part of the growing experience. You will fail if you don't study. It's an encounter, right? Congratulations, student, on getting this article published in a great journal. Good for you. That's an encounter. Let's meet in the chapel to mourn the loss of lives in Beirut and Paris. It's an encounter. And these things, over the course of a four-year, we call it LeMoyne, a formation experience, change lives. On the front end, only about 16 to 17% apply to LeMoyne because we're Catholic and Jesuit. On the back end, by the time they're seniors, over 80% said, I would never, ever consider any other school, almost 90%, other than LeMoyne, because of the impact that Jesuit education has had on me. Right? So these encounters are so meaningful, they're life-changing, and we send out these things, you know, and we don't know what's going to come back, and when we read the impact that our faculty have had on students and Jesuits, it brings tears to our eyes, and we're trying to decide which one do we put in. So we'll keep producing calendars. Thank you for that.
Good morning. I'm a believer in liberal arts. And I was wondering what LeMoyne is doing to make sure that your liberal arts students hear more than male voices in their work.
Male voices in
the liberal arts curriculum, like philosophy, theology, those courses.
Sure. In terms of the curriculum?
Yeah.
Well, okay, so let me tell you just a little bit about the curriculum. And as provost, I was responsible for reimagining the core curriculum at LeMoyne. We have tried over the past 28 years to revise the core. If you know anything about the politics of higher education, revising a core curriculum is a contact sport. It is not a general ed curriculum. There is no menu. Take two of these, four of these, six of these, you know, if the stars align with Venus and you get, that's not how it works on Jesuit campuses. Everybody, regardless of major, has to take philosophy, has to take comparative theology. Note I said comparative theology, has to take world civilization, foreign language, quantitative reasoning. These are carefully constructed courses by the faculty. Now, the academy is moving toward interdisciplinarity. The catch of it is, that's the really cool stuff, you know? Students want interdisciplinary the second they step on our campus. That's not in their best interest. What's in their best interest is that because of the erosion of basic skills in K through 12, is to come to our campus, be steeped in the silos of the disciplines for the first 2 years. This is philosophy, how you think, why you think, what are the big ideas. This is writing. Right? This is world civilization, and when you're ready, and we tell you when you're ready, and you are going to like it that way, when you're ready in the junior year, you're ready for interdisciplinary studies. Not the first year with sexy titles of sexy courses, but in the junior year, once we know something. And when you get to the junior year, we have team teaching so that disciplines can be taught from various perspectives. That's where gender differences can come in, for sure. We hope in the first 2 years, but I guarantee it in the last two, where we ask big questions of disciplines. For example, the philosophy of science is a wonderful example, where two professors will duke it out, if you will, in terms of challenging the big ideas and the big contemporary problems that we have in the 21st century. You'll have the infusion of gender differences, new ways of knowing and seeing. That's part of a liberal arts education. So we require that throughout the four-year experience, but it's most intentional in the last two. But it's also important in who we hire at LeMoyne to be in front of our students. People bring perspectives to the classroom. For that reason, not just because it's against the law, We never ask people that we're bringing to the Lemoyne, what is your faith tradition? We want a multiplicity of voices. We want people from all backgrounds, religious, you name it, ethnic, geographic voices. That's the history and the culture of the Jesuit order, which is a global order. In fact, we insist on it. We also make sure that we hire to have gender balance on our faculty. And all of those things collectively help us move toward a very contemporary 21st century core curriculum. Now, if your question, I hate to assume, but if there's some concern because of the history of the church and the hierarchy of the church being somewhat male-oriented, you may remember that I'm only, you know, the second laywoman to be the president of a Jesuit institution. That's not lost on me. I can say, with complete integrity and honesty, that the Jesuit order gets it, and that in intellectual circles, in our tradition, they insist on more diversity than any other branch of the Catholic Church. And in fact, they celebrated my presidency more than the lay people did. I hope that gets to your question.
Thanks. We're good. So following through on that, I think I remember that that your predecessor, Fred Pestello, was maybe the first layperson to be president of any of the 189?
He was the first permanent president at Lemoyne. Georgetown has had a lay president, Jack DeGioia, for about, I think he's like in his 12th year or something like that, 13th year.
So first at Lemoyne, and you the first woman lay president. So is it something about Lemoyne, you know, because in comparison to the 108, is there something in the water? Is
yes.
there something about Syracuse? What is it?
There is something in the DNA. Yeah, there's something in the DNA. That's a beautiful question. Thank you for that. I actually thought that I wasn't sure if I would live long enough to see a female become president of one of the Jesuit institutions, and I thought it would either be on the East Coast or the West Coast. Anything in the middle, you got to wait, don't tell me. So I thought it would be the University of San Francisco or potentially Fordham in New York City. Lemoyne College is in Syracuse that is known for being, you know, pushing the envelope and being progressive on a whole host of issues. I had always hoped Lemoyne would be the first. It was the first Jesuit institution to open as a co-ed college. I mean, you know, we marvel at this because it's 2015, right? I mean, the Jesuits have to operate within the general context of the Catholic Church too, right? So things take time. I always thought, I hope it's Lemoyne. Wouldn't that be cool? The first to open co-ed, to actually let women into the doors, to give them the access to a rigorous Jesuit education. How wonderful. Could it be? I never thought it'd be me. You know, but yeah, there is something about Syracuse, about the state of New York, and about Lemoyne College. And now I'm hoping, if this presidency goes well, I feel a little bit of the weight, you know, that other boards of trustees, as presidencies become open, will come to the conclusion that we hired a woman as president and the sun came up tomorrow. We can hope.
Good morning.
Good morning.
You said you could speak some more about your service learning, so I'd like to hear more, some examples, and also thank you for your involvement with the Bhutanese community. They've been very helpful through some of your outreach and your programming. But if you could speak some more to that, and I just bring up that today is Parent Teachers Conference Day, and as volunteers, that's always a wonderful way to interact and really make a meaningful difference in a child's life, because it's amazing to me in the schools how few parents from inner city go to those meetings.
Thank you. I can't tell you the hundreds of thousands of hours that our students donate their own time in the community. I will tell you that in terms of Carnegie classification, we've won national awards for the amount of time and the quality of service learning that occurs from our students. The difference with service learning on a campus like Lemoyne and perhaps a secular counterpart is that as part of the Ignatian pedagogy, if you will, that once they go into the community, they need to come back on campus and interact with their professors and do reflection. So I was educated in the Vincentian context, by Vincentian, the Vincentian order. And why am I sharing that with you? In the Vincentian context, which is an order that cares deeply about the poor, there tends to be these service opportunities that are very, very important, but the reflection is not a part of the charism. And why is that relevant? In the Jesuit context, our students are charged to think deeply about and write constant honing of writing skills is essential these days. They have to think about what is it that causes the poverty or the marginalization, disenfranchisement. What is it that causes these things in the first place? In other words, going and doing service is absolutely important, but it's only the first step. It's not far enough to do service as a one-off and then come back to your campus and say, thank God it's not me. That's not how it operates on a Jesuit campus. You need to think about the mechanisms, the economic mechanisms that are in play, the political power differences that are in play in the communities that cause this kind of suffering in the first place. Otherwise, you're not really Jesuit educated. So there's some context. Our students work in the schools, the public schools, the Syracuse City School District in particular, to help with reading and mathematic, quantitative literacy skills. Those two are absolutely essential. On our campus, math and science are the most highly populated majors. One out of every two students at Lemoyne studies math or science, 50%. Now, how do we leverage that into the community? Well, it's in part what I just shared with you in public education, but also in private education in the Catholic schools as well, providing immense tutorial services. But also in our health sciences, for example, you may know that we have a PA program and now nurse practitioner. We can't seem to be producing enough of these mid-levels because of the pressure in the healthcare system and the aging of the baby boomers, and we're not generating enough physicians in this country, particularly primary care physicians. The data are incredibly clear on this topic. If we're not producing enough primary care physicians, there are those who are going without. And our individuals in occupational therapy, our students in nurse practitioner, nursing in general, and our physician assistants, they are throughout Central New York and beyond the boundaries of Central New York providing service learning for institutions. And downtown in the Emmaus Clinic that serves the poor and the indigent, you will often run into Lemoyne PAs who are helping to provide service learning opportunities. But there are so many across the disciplines. All of our accounting majors, we have a wonderful accounting program. This is not meant to brag, but rather reality, that you'd be hard-pressed to find an accounting firm, whether it's in upstate New York or in New York City, where we have thousands of alums populated by our accounting grads. Our students do taxes in tax season for the poor for free. This is something that they have to do as part of their education in the business school. Our marketing students do marketing plans for small startup businesses in the community. And then our own campus. We have entrepreneurs come to campus that try to help individuals kickstart businesses. So we make sure that across all of the disciplines, whether it's in science or math or in the humanities, helping students learn how to write, appreciate great literature, and then also on the social sciences, helping to collect data, right? So there's talk in this town about potential for merging the county and the city. Can you imagine the complexities of that and the political, you know, ramifications of that kind of question? My goodness. Our students will be there helping to gather data, analyze data, so that resources can be deployed in an effective way. If we're not engaging students in real learning, real-world learning, in addition to classroom learning, we're abrogating our responsibilities in Jesuit education. I can give you a long list of all these things if you would like them. Happy to share them.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Lemura.
Thank you. Thank you for listening.
Okay. Want to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll see you in December.
Happy Thanksgiving.